of Naples, Idaho. Eagles gathered there together to guard the truth, so you might know. Down the road that followed Deep Creek, at the turn that crossed the bridge, federal marshals had the roadblock to mark the siege of Ruby Ridge. There the armies of the enemy slayed your bride and only son, nearly killed your close companion when the shrapnel pierced his lung. We stand with you, Randy Weaver, 'cause your Lord and Savior lives. Wheresoever eagles gather, that is where his body is. On that evening, late one August, you were forced to take your stand. There two strangers, as they trespassed, drew first blood on private land. Governor Andrus, back in Boise, let the enemy tell him lies. And from his anti-Christ decision, Sam and Vicky lost their lives. Federal agents, U.S. Marshals, and FBI men stormed the hill, all on false, fictitious charges, given orders shoot to kill. We stand with you, Randy Weaver, 'cause your Lord and Savior lives. Wheresoever eagles gather, that is where his body is. The enemy may surround us in the night, there's a host of heavenly angels hovering near, ready to fight. We stand with you, Randy Weaver, we are proud to call you friend, as we gather here together to stand beside you till the end. We stand with you, Randy Weaver, 'cause your Lord and Savior lives. Wheresoever eagles gather, that is where his body is. Wheresoever eagles gather, that is where his body is.
And good morning. Welcome to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. We're coming to you live this morning, August 22nd, 2026. And we welcome you out there. If I can push the right buttons, we'll bring the men on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
And good morning, Will.
Good morning, fellas.
And Will, would you start us off with a word of prayer this morning, please, sir?
You bet. Father God in heaven, thank you, Lord, for this Saturday morning, and thank you, Lord, for the ability to gather together in your name. And Lord Jesus, just this conversation that we are going to have today, Lord, no matter where it goes, we just ask for your guidance, and that the words that need to be said will be said, and those that need to hear it will hear it, oh Lord God, and that all of it will be pleasing to you. Lord, as your servants, we ask it in your name, and we pray that you'll just continue to bless this ministry and our people, no matter where they may be found. Lord, we love you. We ask it in your name. Amen.
Amen. Well, I guess we're going to start off with talking about just, well, what that song talked about, the siege at Ruby Ridge. It's the 34th anniversary that has taken place right now, and 34th anniversary on that siege started yesterday with a 11-day standoff with the Weaver family, and which resulted in the murder of Vicky Weaver and Samuel Weaver. And you know, it's 34 years ago, and you know, some people might be saying, Why are you talking about this? It's 34 happened 34 years ago. Well, I don't want people to forget. I want people to remember. And there might be people out there that don't know the story. And I want them to know the story. And yeah, so let's start with that. Will, where do you want to start as far as that goes? Why don't you give us kind of a leading up to what happened there?
Sure. I guess we'll just talk about who what the Weaver family was doing there in Idaho, and if I miss any of my facts, or you guys jump in and fact check me, but Randy Weaver and Vicky Weaver, they were from Iowa originally, and they grew up kind of a small town and sweethearts. And Randy Weaver did a stint in the United States Army. He was a Green Beret in the Special Forces during the Vietnam era, and served honorably, was discharged out, came back, and if memory serves me, I think he went to work for John Deere. And as they married and started having kids, their religious convictions started changing, and I guess their view of the world and their understanding of the truth led them to believe that it would be a good idea to just separate themselves out of the whore of Babylon, and they really didn't want to be a part of that. So they decided that they would move, and they found this piece of property there, and I think it was Boulder County, Idaho, up there, and so they moved their young family up there, and they just started a life homesteading and homeschooling and being closer to God. And as a result of that, they got to know some people in different walks of life there, and their paths ended up crossing with what ended up being a informant for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. And times were tough, and money was short, and this ATF agent convinced Randy Weaver to potentially do something that they deemed to be improper, and that really started the events, Jason, Tim. I don't know. That's kind of the early part of thumbnail sketch of everything. And what ended up happening was there was a series of court dates that were issued for Randy Weaver and some questionable clerical errors that I think came up in later trials, of administrative errors of giving Randy Weaver the wrong court dates and then changing court dates without his knowledge, and that resulted in a failure to appear warrant. And what would normally be handled in the office of a sheriff's office or maybe a magistrate's courtroom to clear up this failure to appear resulted in a team of Special Operations U.S. Marshal's office going up on the side of that mountain and surveilling the Weaver family, and ultimately leading to, like what you said, Jason, just an American tragedy. There's no other way to characterize it.
Yeah, and I believe that even, like, it was the local sheriff that refused to go get him, and he said he can sit up there on that mountaintop, or he can sit in my jail cell, and there's really no difference. He's confined himself, and he's not bothering anybody, and we're just going to leave him alone.
You know, I misspoke earlier. I think I said Boulder, but I think it was Boundary County. Is that right?
I think that sounds better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that sheriff, I remember, because I guess the marshals had, before the standoff happened, I think that sheriff refused to cooperate with the marshals and pretty much said the Weaver family doesn't bother us, and you know, they're not bothering anybody up there. And ultimately we saw what happened. But Tim, you were going to say something. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was You're right. I mean, and at the time that all happened, as far as the local sheriff went, Randy basically made an invitation to the sheriff to come up, knock on the door, and have a conversation with him. He said, "We can get this all cleared up," you know.
Right.
And I mean, there was no hostility there. He was there was no need for guaranteed safe passage or safe travel. I mean, at the time, they made it sound real clandestine and real, you know, like, oh well, you know, it was some kind of a military compound, and you know, there was all this fear that really bad. It was just a guy living on the mountain with his family. You know, it wasn't that. It wasn't that. And I think the sheriff, he realized that. So it was like, hey, if you want to talk about it, come on up. I don't see the name. And that informant's name, I think, was, if I remember right, was Kenneth Badley or something like that. And he wanted to use him as an informant on, was it Aryan Nations or those groups?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was Butler's organization. Yeah, Aryan Nations.
I'm pulling some things out of memory here. So like you say, and Badley was the guy supposedly that he sold him these shotguns that were like a quarter of an inch too short or something, that was gas on the fire, you know. So,
That very thing, Tim, in light of, you know, I know we're talking about the events of 34 years ago, but let's put this in perspective. What sparked all of this, you know, those shotguns you're talking about that were a quarter inch too short, that very crime has pretty much been annulled.
Yes.
You know, what happened in the last week, you know, with the NSA, with short barrel shotguns, short barrel rifles, and the suppressors, the very thing that cost the life of Vicky Weaver and Sarah Weaver and the whole thing, that has been done away with effectively with the end of the NSA registry and that sort of thing. So, I mean, put that in perspective. It was a crime then, and it was so verboten then that we had to murder Americans using federal law enforcement. Today, guess what? You can just walk down to the local gun store now and buy the very gun that Randy Weaver lost his wife and son over.
Yes. Yeah. That's the travesty of administrative law, because I can even remember a lot of hubbub in the day over those items in particular, that depending on who measured them, they came up with different answers, even within the ATF, because, you know, yep. It was like, is it before the chamber? Is it after the chamber? And different things. And, well, there could be a quarter inch discrepancy there. In a case like that, wouldn't it seem like, let's go kill them. You know, that's a great idea.
And I don't want to get too off in the weeds in this, but like you said, Tim, it wasn't unlawful to cut down a shotgun.
No.
I could take a 28-inch bent-ribbed, you know, Wingmaster, and I could cut it down to 20 inches, and the feds would be just dandy with that. I could cut it down to 19 inches, and the feds would just be dandy with that. But by golly, you know, if you happen to measure wrong or you were using some kind of Chinese ruler and it was just a little bit too short, you're a felon. You're a felon then, right? And like you said, it's depending on who's I remember back in the day, you know, I don't want to get off too much, but depending on whose dowel rod and where that piece of tape was, you know, that's all of a sudden that was the difference between you and a felony prison sentence.
Yep. Well, and that was the reason up until, like you said, within the last week or so, they went 18 and a half on those barrels, because I think 18 inches was the actual legal limit, but they always added
right.
that half an inch for wiggle room. You know, like,
that's right.
So,
but they also got rid of that when they came out and don't classify them as shotguns. They just can't classify them as firearms. And then you can get a 12-inch or a 10-inch barrel if you wanted.
Yep.
Yeah. It's all smoke and mirrors, you know, at the end of the day. That's what it amounts to. So, that quarter of an inch will hurt someone much worse. And like you say, we don't have to get off just into the gun point of it. That's not what I'm trying to do. But I was just filling in a...
Well, let's go to the phone lines real quick. Hello, caller.
You say seven?
Hello?
Seven.
Yep, you're on the air.
Yes, okay. Yes, definitely.
Hello?
No.
Okay. I'm not sure what happened there, but could hear him talking. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Caller, if you want to call back, that's fine. Where do you want to go next?
Well, I'm going to keep. Go ahead, Tim.
No, I just. You go ahead. Well, I was like going to go on into the whole thing, and you're doing it, so do it.
No, go right ahead. I was going to keep talking about guns, so keep going.
Let's go back to the phone lines real quick. Hello, caller. Hello.
Oh, I think they're having a problem.
Nope, we're here. Can you hear me? Hello, caller.
I think that's
that might be Tim, huh?
Sounded like. I think that's who it was. That's what it sounded like to me. But I just got one word. So.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go back and keep talking about guns there, Will.
Yeah. No, I was just I was thinking about this and. I actually saw a post with Sarah Weaver, who is the oldest daughter of Vicky and Randy, and she was holding an older style Mini 14, and she was the post had to do with that gun belonging to her mother and father, and I went back and looked. And those kids, the remaining daughters, after everything was said and done, they actually got their family's guns back years and years after the fact.
Good.
And I started thinking about, I thought that was super cool. It took a long time to get those back, but they did. The actual word was awarded those back. Isn't that funny how they can steal from you and then award it back to you? But I started thinking with this NFA ruling that came out this week of all, and you said the operative word being administrative law, Tim, think about all the people who have been convicted on having short-barreled shotguns or short-barreled rifles, or maybe, making a suppressor in their garage, because you're a pretty good machinist or whatever the case may be. What happens to all of those guys? In the stroke of a pen, all of that goes away. As far as the crime itself, the administrative law part of it, do those guys cease to be felons? And the answer is no. If you were convicted under those statutes, those rules, that's right, Tim, you're a felon for the rest of your life. And so this isn't retroactive. So I think about the just ludicrous nature of this. Of 2 weeks ago, if I saw it off a shotgun, a quarter of an inch too short, I was a felon. Today, if I do it, I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is just absurd. But anyways, I don't want to get too far off on that.
Well, and it is certainly the exact opposite or in opposition to God's way of doing things. God says the same today and forever. And, that's the way God works. The law is the law. It doesn't change. It doesn't alter. And that's the problem with man's rulings is they're very, there's no uniformity to them. It's like, well, whatever the mood is today. And why aren't they? Why don't they go back and say, well, it's changed. The least we can do is let you. I mean, I'm sure there's probably somewhere people still in prison over the results of those kinds of actions. And like you said, they'll be in prison. When they get out of prison, they'll still be felons. I'm sure they can probably go in and administratively seek to have that set aside, and they might even get that, but at extreme cost and you know, the pain and suffering emotionally of going through all that just to get that set aside. So it's like, wow, the whole thing is, it's ludicrous. And that's what we end up with when people, I mean, we go back to the Second Amendment, shall not be infringed. I mean, that was the, that was that lock. We say that a lot. And the reason we say that, and the reason our forefathers said that, is it's not something that can be changed ever. The right to keep. It doesn't say what particular type, what particular kind. I mean, it's just, nope, this is an axiom. And they're not telling us what we can do. They're telling us that the government can't bother you for that, you know, ever. That's it. And that's, to a certain way of thinking, that's the way God works. God says, nope, this is a, you can, it's written in stone. You know, you can't do that. And so when they try to make man's rules that way, we end up with these kind of schisms that go on. People die. People are jailed. People's lives are ruined. People are killed and murdered. So anyway, I'm reminded of the fact that they killed Vicky, you know. I mean, they killed Sam, and to me at least, there's never any official, what do you want to call it, declaration of the fact that they were murdered out of hand, but they paid. And
that's right.
under the system of under the evil empire system, if you pay, that's the same to me as a declaration of we were wrong. So, but they called it a wrongful death lawsuit, I think was what it was called.
Wrongful death, but I mean, I think that it even came out in court that it was, they were sent there with, you know, use deadly force, weren't they?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Extreme prejudice orders. Yeah. Or, you know, shoot to kill or, yeah. So.
Well, and Vicky, I mean, shot in the head. Why holding the baby? I mean, it's, I mean, that's, yep. You know, if they can't claim self-defense on that.
No. Well, really, is that any different than say, I don't know, say you go out and you have a buck permit when you're hunting. And I know this is, you know, and you accidentally shoot a doe and you call up and turn yourself in as, well, I shot the wrong sex. They're going to fine you. They're going to take everything else that they did. But their response is, you should identify and know what you're shooting. There's no mistakes allowed. Isn't this the same situation there? There was no...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Will.
No, I'm going to jump on it and say, because in some of these wrongful death... In the wrongful death lawsuits of Vicky Weaver and Sammy Weaver... In testimony, it came out that the FBI profiler, because remember, the U.S. Marshals, they lit the fuse on all of this. And when Sammy Weaver flushed them out, so to speak, while he was out walking with his dog, which was a yellow lab striker, and the dog barks and Sammy Weaver yells back to Kevin Harris and turn tails to run, the marshal shoots the dog. Sammy Weaver fires back in the brush, kills one of the marshals. That's what starts all of this. Well, that's not who killed Vicky Weaver. Who killed Vicky Weaver was the hostage rescue team from the FBI, one of the most premier SWAT teams in the country. And they were mobilized and brought in, and the FBI took over this whole mess. And what came out in the testimony from some of these FBI agents and a very brave U.S. Marshal, and I will give him credit because there was a gentleman who testified and lost his career over all of this because he told the truth. And what came out was that the FBI profiler had identified Vicky Weaver as the spiritual head of the household And if she was taken out, that the rest of the family would give up.
Yep. Yep.
And
I remember so, that. Yeah.
Yeah. So when Lon Hurucci pulled the trigger, and Vicky Weaver was shot through the head while holding baby Elisheba, that was a 100% informed choice. It wasn't an accident. He had been given orders, so to speak, that if one person needed to die, it was to be Vicky Weaver. Because if she died, if she was killed, the rest of the family would fold and they would give up. So you call it what you want to call it. I call that pure team murder. That
I do too.
You shoot an unarmed non-combatant. She wasn't holding a gun. She wasn't being aggressive. There, if you look at the use of force continuum that most law enforcement goes by, there was no. She was yelling from the doorway towards Randy Weaver. There was no aggression. There was no immediate loss of life or immediate use of deadly force. And Lon Hurucci just sent a 308 through her head. That's murder. And Lon Hurucci was never called to account for this. To my knowledge, he's still alive. He's still a free man. He shouldn't be, but he is. He's still a free man. And in my opinion, he murdered Vicky Weaver, and it was intentional. I mean, it was absolutely intentional.
Yeah. Well, and to my way of thinking, that's the other word for wrongful death is murder. I mean, you know, especially yeah. if it was pre-planned. To me, a wrongful death would be wrong place, wrong time, and more or less an accidental type situation. But that kind of wrongful death is murder. You had orders, you had everything else, and when you pulled that trigger, that was the same as
a failure to
identify a non-combatant target. But it didn't matter.
In the world of legalese, there are culpable mind states, and you have to use the culpability to determine the rung of a crime. And wrongful death, so you have negligence and criminal negligence and recklessness, and then it goes all the way up into intentional, right? So intentional being murder. And you can kind of go down the rung of recklessness. You know, you were driving on the wrong side of the road while under the influence or something. It may not have been your intent to kill someone, but you ran into somebody, so there you go. Negligence, we could understand what that means. So if you look at it from a purely lawful or legal standpoint, this was an intentional act. There's no way to say that Vicky Weaver was not murdered. And you're right. When they wrote those checks, and that judge made that decision in that courtroom, what they were saying is she was murdered. But since we're the federal government, we will never call it that.
Yeah, yeah, we won't. Yeah, we're not gonna. No culpability on our part. You know?
Right.
And the list is quite long. Never mind the fact that we put a sniper there with these orders and everything else. So yeah, very,
yeah.
Very, what a travesty. And, I don't know. And there was I don't know about anybody else, but the thing that has seemed to me over this, and you know, I remember this well, I mean, we were pretty, it was during my lifetime when a lot of things were going on. And, within our group, we had a big men's meeting. We had people called in all over the place from Estes Park over it because there was huge concern about the extent of government overreach involved in this. And but the point being that it's such a small thing blown into such a big thing. I mean, you know, isn't that... I mean, and yes, Sammy shot back at the guy. Well, they were there with no served warrant. no, you know, threat. I mean, it was a trespassing issue in some people's minds and everything else. Well, I don't see that as being an overreaction. He didn't know who was there or what was going on. There was no identification of who they were or anything else. And honestly, at that particular moment, which to me was kind of a spark moment, you know, that sent the whole powder keg up, we don't really know exactly what happened there. All you have is the words of whoever was left, that, you know, dead people
and
tell
those
the
were
tale.
The, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and on its face, if you look at it on its face, let's stop and think about this. Something or someone just destroyed his personal property, which was his dog. They did so while being on private property unlawfully, and they're destroying property and shooting. I mean, they're using deadly force and shooting in your direction. If you take away the federal U.S. Marshal from that, and you just put it in, you know, the regular Joe has trespassed on your property, he shoots your dog and shoots at you, there's not a court in the country that wouldn't say you're justified in shooting back at them.
No, exactly. It'd be considered self-defense.
Absolutely. And so you have a 14-year-old boy walking around in the woods, and he was armed because it's the woods of North Idaho, and that's what they do, right? You walk around with a rifle at least, you know, just in case. You may have a bear up your tree in your front yard. It's possible. And so when you put it into perspective, if you blank out the name federal U.S. Marshal and you put in any other name, neighbor, trespasser, whatever. Like I said, there's not a court in this country that wouldn't say that Sammy Weaver was justified in returning fire because his life was in jeopardy, and it had already been demonstrated by the destruction of his personal property, that dog. But because it's the all-powerful federal government, that doesn't apply. And to me, like you said, Tim, the sparking of this whole event of where it just cascaded out of control, where it was soldiers and the FBI and just the overtaking of a county by the federal government, because that is what happened. They moved in and usurped the authority of the sheriff, of the local sheriff's deputy. I mean, just the whole thing, they were flexing the power of the federal government. And for good reason, there were men all across this country that became painfully aware of the overreaching of the federal government. And this was on the hill of how many years? I'm trying to think. Guys, help me do the math. Was it 10 years after Gordon Call?
Nine.
Of what happened up there in Medina? 9 years.
Yeah,
okay, so nine years. So you kind of look at the events here, right, of that was still fresh on everyone's memory, and here it is happening again. And the similarities are strong between the two events. And Jason, I would like to kind of switch into a little bit about what happened there at Estes Park and kind of what the mainstream media and all of that said was the spark of the militia movement.
Yeah,
and
go ahead.
What the significance
Absolutely.
Of, well, no, I'm going to ask you to. I mean, I know that's something you've been working on, and really the spark of I won't call it the militia movement. I'm going to call it the Patriot movement, because I think that's when we really saw the uptick and the rise of a lot of people in this country becoming aware and maybe breaking out.
We'll go to that in just a minute. Let's just give me a minute here. I'm taking care of something, but just carry on.
Well, Tim, you lived it. What do you think about that?
Well, it was about the time that people began to become, there was I'd call it an awakening. I mean, all they did was kick a hornet's nest with this whole thing. And like you said, you had the Gordon Call movement. There was a slew of different ones, that were, people were unhappy with overreach and everything else. And so then they made it worse by pouring gas on the fire, just like, with, in most cases, mundane things. And basically you had a lot of Christian leaders come together. In some cases, it was a galvanizing effect. Not necessarily all of us believed the same way. Of course, that was also used against people, too, because they were all lumped into the same thing. You know, they were, and it was like, nah, we don't all believe that way, but we all do have a common belief that you guys are doing some bad things, you know, and that you're exceeding your mandate, you know, and that you're going out here and trampling on people. And so there was a, it was a galvanizing effort. There was a unification there across platforms in the United States for responsiveness to that. And I actually think it made a difference personally. I mean, I don't know that there were any confrontations there, but it was simply the fact that there could be a confrontation there that, I mean, at that time, in that time frame in the 80s and 90s, we had churches being locked up for homeschool. We had the Randy Weaver incident. We had the Gordon Call incident. We had all these things going on, and there was godly resistance and or divine resistance across the line. And sometimes belief systems didn't align, but it was nevertheless that, hey, if you don't help these people out, if you don't support these people, you know, nobody's going to have anything. So there was a response unit put in place. There were really phone lines established and channels of communication that weren't there prior to that, you know. So I think it made a difference. I mean, and there's a lot of stories we could talk about for hours and hours about things that went on and different situations that never hit the news, you know, or never got out of their own local bailiwick as far as this is shut down, you know. And so when you look at it, because they didn't want that kind of information out there, you don't want people to think they're effective or that there's any, because that breeds solidarity and that breeds a degree of power of response that is, you know, on the news media situation that's detrimental to their power structure. So, there was a lot of those kind of things that went on all the way across the board. And did it make a change? Well, I don't know. Pretty much most of the states now have homeschool movements. Today we have, like we said, here within the last month, we've had a cessation of the NFA, which is, it's on the ropes, man. May very well go away shortly. The ATF is revising statutes for vagueness. So I think, you know, sometimes it's a long time coming, but I think you can trace a lot of modern day events where they're walking back things clear back to these points here, where it's been like the remnant has become more awake, and the people have begun to understand and to cooperate in a way that says, hey, no, and we just say no. So don't you?
100%. I 100% agree with you. One of the things that you look at is, or that I look at least, is if you look at what the Weaver family was doing at that time, for the lack of a better term, I'm just going to say back to the roots. They were maybe a little bit of ahead of their time, but it was just what folks are calling today back to the roots movement or homesteading or whatever the case may be. That's really what the Weaver family was doing. Yeah. You know, they had a small chunk of land that was theirs, bought and paid for, and by golly, you know, they were hook or crook. They were making they were providing for their family out of their own two hands, educating their children according to their own will, not the will of a government. And if you look at how many families across the country today are using that same model, they're doing the same thing. There's magazines, there's websites, there's TikTok channels, YouTube channels, every form of media you can think of that highlight and promote this kind of lifestyle. And think about the coverage at the time that they were separatists and radicals and all of this sort of stuff. And if you look at the idyllic lifestyle those children and their parents and their friends were living, there are probably, I would venture to say, hundreds of thousands of Americans today that say, my gosh, I wish I could live that way. And, you know, and so I think in that sense, if you look at how far we've come over the last three decades, outside of our own little world, I think there are many people that would look at the way the Weavers were living and think that that's not strange at all. That in many ways they're probably envious of the way the Weavers were living, and that's good. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, Tim.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I would like to say that. Yeah. And, you know, you just reading some of the stuff that came out of, you know, even the court proceedings and stuff, where I quote, they have the family was reported as having right wing beliefs, of having voiced distrust of the federal government and opposing the New World Order. The evidence was there that they were a deeply religious. They were believers in homeschooling and devotees to the Christian identity movement. And this is part of the defense. This is how they were trying to justify the murders of Sam and Vicky.
Yeah.
And that's and when we had that meeting, and we can move into talking about the meeting that we had up in October of 1992 up in Estes Park, Colorado, where Pastor Peters put the call out and had a meeting, and there was men that came in from all over the country. There was people from 40 states. There was over 500 men that gathered on the top of a mountain. Riley Donica was there from Oklahoma, Charles Wiseman, Greg Dixon, Steve Grabber, Red Beckman, Kirk Lyons, Chris Temple, Louis Beam, Larry Pratt, I'm trying to think who else was there. I'm trying to look at the list. John Nelson, Doug Evers, S.A. Freeman, it was a lot of speakers and a lot of short messages on. Earl Jones was there, 20-30 minute messages talking about what has happened here. And at this time, things were still not clear. There was a lot of stuff that we didn't know about what actually really happened. There was a lot of stuff that came in. Yeah, the phone number to call in is 970-224-4203, or you can call 307-745-5913. But anyway, there was 500 men that gathered there, and it just had a fantastic meeting. And it's what it came out, and, there was the – well, we'll go to the phone lines. Hello, caller.
Hey, Jason, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Warren.
Yeah, I just got a call in this morning. Your daughter's handicapped, right?
That's what they would say. Yeah.
Well, does she have an ID?
No, I don't know what that is.
You know, like your driver's license, state ID or whatever.
Yeah, she does.
Well, Warren does too, but see, a few weeks ago, we tried to get on to Port McCoy, Wisconsin, and he didn't have a star on his ID. And the DMV here in Wisconsin won't give him one. See, he's a board of the county. And here in Wisconsin, if you're mentally retarded, you can't vote. Warren has voted before in his life, But in Wisconsin, if you're retired, you're not even considered a citizen. You're basically considered an it. I mean, we're struggling like you won't believe. They just to get a, you know, one of these communist stars on there. What's happening? And we're going to the times like in Nazi Germany. If Donald Hitler has his way, he'll have anybody that's incompetent put to death. Because he's claiming that incompetent people voted for Joe Biden during the last election. And so my son's being denied his constitutional rights as a citizen. 14th Amendment says if you're born in the United States, you're a citizen. But yet Upton County and the state of Wisconsin don't consider him a citizen. So I just want to put that out there for all of America. I imagine I'm just that way all over.
Yep. Well, I appreciate that, Warren.
Okay, thank you.
All right, God bless. And we'll stay with the phone lines. Hello, caller.
Oh, yeah. This is Eric in North Carolina. I'd like to just, it was such an excellent program today. You guys really got great memory for what happened back then. I'm really glad. And what they did in Estes Park, I'm sorry I didn't get up there to that meeting. Okay, so they were going to take a fuel bladder of gasoline, like Tim or somebody just said, gasoline on the fire. They, it was a woman, a lawyer, Thompson or something, called Bill Cooper. And he had on his program every night the siege was happening. They were going to dump that a bladder of fuel on the Weaver's house. And,
yep, I remember
and
that.
They called it in. Lots of people called and kind of put a stop to it. They were going to do it. And I think it was one of the main leaders of that military siege was Michael Aquino. I think he's with the Church of Satan, pretty big. It was at that same time when they were getting rid of the Christian chaplains on the all the army bases. They could not use the name Jesus any time. They had to use a different name. And I think it was just a concerted effort to nip in the bud the Christians by the, Satanists, Antichrist people in general, demonic people. And Bill Cooper really did a good, he was really good. I think he was one of our main patriots of that time. He put a stop to so much. And let's see. Yeah, Lon Horiuchi also, after he murdered Vicki Weaver, he was not reprimanded, he was investigated, but he was given a raise in salary.
Mm-hmm.
He was,
yep.
And promotion, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then he ended up in Waco.
And Bill Cooper was the one who said, gentlemen, start your militias. And that's what we did. Everybody started their militias, and I went to a lot of militia meetings, and it was just a really good time to be alive. All the great information we got. We don't get that anymore because the shortwave radio is, we're just not getting good information anymore. People nowadays, they don't know anything. Yeah, I think Michael Aquino was the Church of Satan, one of the big boys, high level. And it was a great, great, great program, and I'm so glad that you got the Coffee with the Wranglers. Such a great show.
Well, thanks, Eric. We really appreciate you being out there and listening to us.
Oh, I that's my main. I haven't seen TV either. I haven't turned a TV on since October 2011. So this is one of my main news sources right here. I will always listen to Coffee. All right, thank you.
Thanks. God bless. Well, and the phone number is 307-745-5913 or 970-224-4203. Yeah, we'd like to hear from you. If you got a comment or you got a piece of information that we missed and that you'd like to get out there, this is that we're talking about the Weaver incident and on the 34th anniversary of it, and a lot of stuff came out of that, and a lot of stuff came out of this meeting that happened, and I'll tell you what, it was a good meeting. There was people from all, I mean, different churches, different beliefs, but they gathered together because of this incident. And, you know, and is what came out of it is we've got a real problem if the federal government is coming in and trying to do, is doing these kinds of things and conducting murders based on religious beliefs. And that's what it boiled down to, is this was done after looking at all the evidence and all the documentation. They were targeted because they were considered, you know, a white supremacist Christian identity family. And that's what it boiled down to. And I think that that's, I think that's accurate.
Yeah. Well, and it occurred to me. Go ahead, Will.
No. Go ahead, Tim, please.
It occurred to me that if you compare that to modern day times, you know, this whole Muslim Islamist thing like in Dearborn and all that, you know, here we had a group that called themselves or that, you know, participated in withdrawal from society. I mean, they basically bought 20 acres up there. They're like, we just want to take care of our family. We want to educate our family. And we more or less want to be left alone, which evidently could not happen. You know, I mean, they were like, oh, no, you're going to do that. But at the same time, we have this mundane attitude toward these invading forces that are coming in today. They're not interested in being, you know, left alone. No, they want to invade, propagate things on a nationwide level and take over. And it's like, okay, so which one is worse? And I'm not saying they're the same thing, but I'm saying that the responses are sure variable, aren't they? You know, that was all that just kind of occurred to me.
Well, what you're talking about of, you know, what was what the Weaver family was accused of compared to reality and what's happening today, you know, 3 decades later. One of the things that came up in those wrongful death trials is, you know, Jason, you were mentioning some of these things earlier where they were in a link to the Christian identity movement and all of that sort of thing. Well, one of the things that kind of came to the forefront, and you got to remember these trials were going on during the Clinton administration. So it was Janet Reno's Department of Justice that was leading a lot of this. And one of the things that came out was that the Weaver family had believed that ZOG, remember that acronym, the Zionist Occupied Government, that, you know, that there were the Jewish state of Israel had high placed officials within the government that were pulling the strings and all of it. And it was just made out to be this huge conspiracy theory, crazy person thing. Well, I mean, you look at it now and you look at people like Tucker Carlson or Candace Owens or whoever the case may be of these, you know, very mainstream people, Representative Thomas Massie, Marjorie Taylor Greene, all of, well, are they going to get their wives murdered in the door of their doorstep, you know, or the door of on their front porch? Because that sure sounds like they believe in ZOG as well. And when you really kind of look at that, is what once was considered to be, I don't know, forbidden or taboo, I would consider that to have come mainstream. I mean, what do y'all think?
I would agree. Yeah,
it's definitely no longer lunatic fringe. That's for sure, because that's what they would have called it back then. You know, you were considered.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, now it's like, well, I mean, there's a lot of mainstream people out there now that go, maybe you're right. You know, so it's, if the proof is in the pudding, like, you know, it's definitely solidifying when we see all that.
And don't you think that's one of the reasons why they want to memory hole what happened at Ruby Ridge? Don't you think that's because they don't want it coming out that there were murders of U.S. citizens by the federal government and their beliefs dealt with this sort of thing, because the rise of those people learning the truth in this country and really worldwide is just been exponential, right? I mean, it's just gone through the roof of people kind of learning the truth. And they don't want those folks to go back 34 years and realize, my gosh, you want to talk about a double witness or proving that this stuff that we're learning is true. They were murdering U.S. citizens for having these beliefs 30 years ago. So I think that's something for us to remember, too, they didn't want people having those beliefs. And you guys know that. I mean, you saw it firsthand in real life with the persecution against certain churches and certain movements. They just weren't going to stand for that.
Well, and if you use the benchmarks proof, situation that I use a lot of times myself on things, given the Epstein files and the Clintons' involvement in that, and today, at least in modern days, and you see what's going on, is there any surprise to anyone that this happened there? I mean, to me, this just is a further, what do you want to call it, concrete evidence of the satanic slant that they had clear back then. It was a good against evil thing. There's no, if anything, it just lends credence to it. So, yeah, you definitely want to memory hold this, because that's just more evidence. You know, that, they were bad. It was a bad group, bad power trip.
You know, I don't want to minimize anything because just because I don't want to, but it hasn't been lost on me over the years of thinking about the Weavers. But you can say the same thing about what happened with the Call family, and for that matter, Waco.
Absolutely.
I mean, is this the very thing that the Weavers wanted to escape from, as far as Babylon and the belief that an all-powerful federal government would come to crush the people who held their beliefs? Happened,
right?
The very thing that they wanted to set, that what they believed happened, and I think that's something that's not talked about enough. And I don't know if I'm articulating that well enough, guys, but it their beliefs weren't far fetched; they came true. And I think that, and it was all too real to people like us, especially at the time, because we were all Randy Weaver. You know, we realized that these people that believe the way we do, this could happen to us as well. And for that reason, I'll say it. I mean, I don't think I'm too far fetched from this. People like Vicky Weaver, they were martyrs. Sammy Weaver was a martyr. And they should be remembered that way. They gave their lives, and it very well could have been any number of us or people that we know. So, I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, and I'd like just talk about how the U.S. Marshals, how they – I really think that at the same time when they do things like this, that they actually like to brag about it. I happened to be in Fort Smith, Arkansas a couple years ago, and didn't realize that there was a U.S. Marshals museum there. And And it was one of those things. It's like, man, I kind of wanted to go in, and I kind of just wanted to stay away from that place as well. But ended up going in and walked around it. Had my oldest son, Justice, with me, and we walked around. And, you know, it was – and some of the stuff was neat and everything like that. And walk around a corner, and all of a sudden there's, a big sign that says Ruby Ridge. And it had the – you know, it had the pictures. It had a lot of pictures. It had a lot of surveillance gear that was on loan from the U.S. Marshals that they used during the siege. There was firearms that were used there, and just a lot of pictures. But they had the pictures of Vicky Weaver that was standing there, like the one that, you know, they've shown all over the internet. standing there in front of her front door, and the pictures of Sammy and stuff like that. And I really got the impression that, I mean, they were bragging about it. It was just, yeah, and pictures of Lon Hiroshi, you know, standing there proudful with his sniper rifle. And I tell you what, it just turned my stomach because they were bragging about what they did. And that's what it is. The arrogance that that they, you know, put it up there and this is what we did. Then we did it and we got away with it is basically is what I saw. And it wasn't that very far away from the Gordon Call display that they had on the Mendina incident. And it was the same cotton picking thing. They were bragging about what they did and they were arrogant. They wanted to put it right in your face and say, this is what we did and we got away with it. And I tell you what, it was disgusting. And but I anointed those displays and prayed against them while I was there. And I really felt like God put me there at that spot to see this, to fight against it. And so praise God for that. But, you know, looking at it, it was an eye opener for me. That's for sure.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. Even though the court found in favor of wrongful death and everything, they still got the brag side up there. Yeah. That's like, wow. And I don't think they did that for the public. Do you? That was more for their people. I mean, for their groups. Let us brag it up so we can show you what we can do, you know? So, Wow.
Well, and I know we're right there at the top of the hour, but, you know, one of the other things that I wanted to say is about Lon Hiroshi. You know, afterwards, he ended up going on, and I was a big fan. I really did like some of HS Precision's stuff, and HS Precision was a company that made very fine rifles, very fine stocks. Never could afford one of their rifles, but I did end up getting one of their stocks, and was a very, very impressed with it. And Lon Hiroshi went in to be a spokesperson for HS Precision and wrote letters and they published them on what fine. He used the HS Precision rifle to shoot Vicky Weaver in the head and wrote to them and talking about what a fine rifle it was and how great it was and, you know, how impressed he was, how accurate it was and all that sort of thing. And they published it and used it. And I was so disgusted about that I called HS Precision up and I told them, I said, you know, I really, really, really like this stock, but I said, I will never buy another product from you guys again. And I didn't. So anyway, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back right after this song.
Once a man's home was his castle, only his foes would violate. And the border of his property was the moat round his estate. All these kingly rights of sovereignty, once bestowed on us by God, have been lost somewhere in history, in the fine print and the fraud. Once a man and his religion was protected by the law. In America, the Constitution formed a verbal wall. Now the law that used to separate is a law that's daily breached. Now the worried watchman on the wall is crying, heaven's under siege. Heaven's under siege. Woe now, heaven's under siege. When the Bible and the Bill of Rights have been trampled in the streets. And when the gentle lambs of Jesus Christ rot in jails for their beliefs. You know corruption reigns in government.
but heaven's under siege. Heard the watchman sound a warning call back in 1992, when they murdered Dickie Weaver, just like they'll murder me or you. When they stormed the church in Waco, women and children burned alive. And now the ones who rot in prisons are the ones they let survive. Heaven's under siege, whoa, now heaven's under siege. When the Bible and the Bill of Rights have been trampled in the streets, and when the gentle lambs of Jesus Christ brought in jails for their beliefs, you know corruption reigns in government when heaven's under siege. Now a voice cries in the wilderness as the Lord prepares his church. Will his called and chosen servants be found faithful on this earth? Will we pass the test of heaven's quest, never counting earthly loss? Will we fight like Christian soldiers with our eyes upon the cross? Heaven's under siege, whoa, now heaven's under siege. When the Bible and the Bill of Rights have been trampled in the streets, and when the gentle lambs of Jesus Christ brought in jails for their beliefs, you know corruption reigns in government when heaven's under siege. I said corruption reigns in government when heaven's under siege.
And we are back for round two of Coffee with Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the SFAWBN. And if you'd like to call us, we'd like to hear from you. 970-224-4203 or 307-745-5913.
Before we move on too far, you know, I recently, in the last few months, I don't remember the exact month. I think it was in May, but, you know, Bo Greitz passed away, and Jack McLamb's been gone for a while. And I was just thinking during the break of other than those three girls, and I believe Kevin Harris is still alive, time is taking its toll. People are just passing away that were associated with that event, and that's just even more reason that we need to keep talking about it so that it just doesn't fade away.
Well, I know, and that's what I was, and I've been working on and had quite a few difficulties this week, and I'm working on trying to get these tapes run in, but just going through the list and these men and the men that, you know, and I was very privileged to be able to meet most of these guys. Well, all of them, actually, you know, but Pastor Peters, you know, and, you know, is gone. And but we're still putting these messages out. And I am I'm very thankful that we're able to do that. You know, that's a blessing. And but you know, just Pastor Riley Donica, he was a fantastic man. Went down to Oklahoma, met him several times, and he was up here in Colorado a number of times. Charles Wiseman, Greg Dixon, Steven Graber, I mean Red Beckman. You know, these guys that there's only a couple of these men left that, you know, yeah. Richard Butler was there, Frank Isabel, Doug Pugh. Out of all these men that are on that spoke at this meeting in 1992, I only know two of maybe three of them that are still alive. And
Lewis Beam, and who are the other two, Jason?
Chris Temple. And Kirk Lyons, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think all of them. Larry Pratt, he passed away quite some time ago, didn't he?
He did. Yeah. Larry Pratt passed. Yeah. Uh huh.
And And Richard Buckler, he passed away. Frank Isabel. And Doug Evers, Charles Wiseman. I think there's only three of them that are left alive. So I don't know. That's why, you know, it's our job to keep educating people on these issues and on things that happened so that people can be aware of it.
Yeah, very important. Well, and if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it, you know, and I think you were talking about the memory holes, and there's other ones, just touch on briefly if anybody wants to do. You had the Battle of Athens in 1946. The coal miners' wars, the West Virginia coal mine or coal wars in 19. That was a long one. I think it ran from like 1910 to 1920 or right in there somewhere. And, you know, these battles were against entrenched power of the day against ordinary people, God's folks. And some of the things were probably distorted and twisted, but did history do that or what happened? I mean, there have been these sorts of flashpoints throughout our history, but nobody knows anything about them. You know, they forget. So
you're right, Tim. Jason educated me recently on the bonus wars that happened, and we were talking about that. We were talking about the Battle of Athens there in Tennessee and that sort of thing. And in my opinion, those are things that should be taught right up there with Lexington and Concord. I mean, yeah. Those are the same type of event. You know, those are the same type of events where you had regular people take up arms against an oppressive, tyrannical government, whether it be a county government or a state government or whatever the case may be, and face down the giant and do the right thing and succeed in it. And those are the type of stories, real life, true, historically accurate stories that used to empower our young men to become men of righteousness and men of principle, that you do stand up. And I think that's why their memory hold, right? They just want you to be a weak-minded just goy and sheep, yeah, whatever. And they don't want resistance. And when you tell those stories, you can go all the way back to where our people came from, and it may be running meat or whatever the case may be, they don't want you to know those things. They don't want you to know the history of your people, that there were people who took stands, and we call those people heroes. And they would rather your heroes be computer-generated, AI-generated superheroes instead of actually focusing on the people who were real-life heroes. And that's something that we need to, and once again, that's the reason why we need to talk about these men that we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah, and I was just going to say, and I know we've talked about this, I don't think we've ever talked about it online, but after, after things changed after 92, I mean, we had the preparedness expos that started, and there was more meetings. There was stuff that just happened all across the country, and people were they were preparing for things, and they were and they took it very, very seriously. Before Y2K, going to the all the preparedness expos, I went to with Pastor Peters. We were in Spokane, Washington several times, Seattle, all over the place, and it was interesting because one of the times we were out there, and there was all these protesters outside, and I was sitting there, we were talking with somebody else, and we were like, you know, let's go see what these protesters are about. And it was hilarious because they were there to protest. They were paid protesters to come protest because Pete Peters was there. And
oh, my God.
It was kind of funny when you walk out there and you're talking to them, trying to figure out what they're protesting. And then it's like, okay. And it was hilarious. But
So they didn't recognize Pastor Peters? Is that what you're saying, Dave?
Yeah, they didn't recognize him. They had no idea who they were. They were just taking money. And I ended up talking to some of them, and I'm like, what are you guys protesting this guy for, and this and that? And finally they just told me, we were paid to do it. And, okay. And, and it was a bunch of blacks that were out there that were, you know, hooping, hollering, and, you know, acting like jungle bunnies. And they were just paid protesters. I mean, nothing new under the sun there.
Isn't that the height of basically whoredom? You know, it's like, yeah. So, well, and a lot of these things that we're talking about as far as these people go, and I think, Will, you used the word martyrs, or Jason did, I don't remember which one, but the point being that they are martyrs, and it reminds me of the verse in the Bible in Revelation 6, you know, when it says that that was that fifth seal, and underneath the altar of the souls of those who had been killed because of the word of God, and because of the testimony which they had maintained,
yep.
You know, how long, O Lord, holy and true, will you refrain from judging and avenging our blood on those who live on the earth? So there's, that's not a small group under there, I don't think. I mean, if we could go back and see all of that history with clear eyes, that cup's getting really full. So, you know.
No doubt. You know, and not to mention, I just want to throw this out there. Obviously, we're talking about those murdered, you know, your Gordon Calls and Vicki Weaver and Sammy Weaver and that sort of thing. But think about how many men have perished in prison for being jailed for those beliefs as well. And I think those people are martyrs as well.
Yep, they count. You bet.
Absolutely.
You bet.
Yeah. And we don't have any idea how many of them have, you know, been martyrs over the years that are, you know, died incarcerated or still incarcerated or anything like that.
Yeah. Or that something went on and the propaganda machine ground it up and made it out to be something else. I mean, that list is long of unknowns to us. So that's that great deception that the Bible talks about. It's going on even now. You know, that you just, there's these keynote moments that we can find, that we can see, but for every one we find, there's probably hundreds that we don't know about. So.
And I think one of the keys there is you were just talking about Revelation, Tim, and the fifth seal of it. It's going to be unknown to us as men, but it is very much known to the everlasting God. And nothing is memory hold with him. And, and that is a kind of an important part for us as humans living in this world is, our actions may be forgotten, are never known, to those that are around us. But the Lord knows. And we live our lives in a way or should live our lives in such a way where we're not necessarily looking for favor of men, but we are looking for the favor of our Lord, because that is what we're going to be called into account for, and ultimately that's what matters.
Yep, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I know, and we could throw in all kinds of stuff, but I mean, I think that you know, just even with what happened with the USS Liberty ties in with that, and you know, to Tina Peters, I mean,
yep.
You know, there's these people that have stood up, and they do this, and they put this in front of us because they don't want people to stand up for their beliefs, and.
Yeah.
I was talking with a man the other day, Tom from up in Wyoming, and had a really good talk with him. And he agreed to come on and talk with us sometime. But he's kind of he basically makes it his job to be a a hemorrhoid to these elected officials and these people that are in office in the state of Wyoming. And he goes through and, I mean, he goes to the city council meetings. He goes to the county meetings. He goes to the state meetings. And, he challenges them on everything that they're trying to do and says, you know, he requests their oath of office, their renewed oath of office, their, where's their surety bonds? Where's their bonds? And how's, you know, and he said that, you know, he said that there's a lot of people that just want to hide from these people, and because, you know, they're scared of them, because they're scared of what they might do. And he says, you know what? I found the exact opposite. He said, these people actually respect me for doing what I'm doing because I'm holding them accountable. And he said, that's what we need more of people to do. And he said, when I go to one of these meetings, he said, they address me and they know who I am. And they don't want to fight. They don't want to be challenged in any way. And he said this, you know, he said, but it's, he doesn't have any problems with the government because they don't want to give him any problems. And, anyway, we had a really good talk, and he was telling me some of the stuff that he had going on, and he, you know, basically said, he said, you know, we've got, he said, when I first came to Laramie, Wyoming, he said that we had these churches, and he said there wasn't a church that had over 150 people in it in Laramie, and he said now, he said we've got several churches that have over 1,000 people in attendance. Every Sunday they've got three services, this and that. And he said, our, community, our county has went to, I'll leave out the rest, but you know, we talked about it. He says, you know, there's a pride flag all over the place. There's these, you know, it's, we're the queer central of Wyoming now, and it's happened. And we've got big churches, more Christians. And he said, if we, if people wanted to take back their community, he said, when they started today, he said, we could take it back in 3 years. We could have people in office that were doing their job. And he said, the problem is he's went around to the different churches and wanted to speak about taking back their community, and nobody's interested in doing it. And, yep. So a sad state of affairs, but it's, I believe he's telling me the truth.
I think that goes back to the churches don't want to occupy. They're so heavenly minded that they're no good earthly. You know, whatever how that goes, I probably messed that up. But that's kind of become the pervasive mindset in the majority of churches. That they want people to feel good, and they want to, you know, want people to know that they're going to get raptured out of here and that they're going to be in heaven, and they don't want to be any type of salt and light while they're here, because you may offend somebody or something like that. So yeah, Tom's right.
Yeah. Well, and I think that. And that's what we're supposed to be doing, is occupying until Christ returned, and. Well, I'm gonna ask you to, you know, we've talked about it, and you've got a pretty good, you gave me a pretty good talk on enduring to the end. And I think that if you don't mind talking about that for a minute, I know I don't want to put you on the spot, but I think it'd be good for our listeners to hear. It was good for me to hear. And, you know, as we talk about so many of these things that are taking place, have taken place in our nation, some of this stuff is history lessons, but some of this stuff is happening today. And I don't want to scare people, and I don't want to be like, you know, these, fear radio and have people that, you know, think that we're just, we're promoting the fear, because it doesn't scare me, and I'm not scared, and I don't want to make anybody else scared, and I don't want people to think that, you know, hey, you know, we're talking about this, so you know, and this could happen to you. It's, you know, we've got to have faith, we've got to have strength, but I really believe that it's something that we need to be aware of, and people need to know about it. And you've got a good talk on enduring till the end, and if you wouldn't mind talking about that for just a few minutes, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem at all. I guess the only problem is I'm going to have to try to remember what I said. Jason and I, a couple of days ago, started having a conversation, and that conversation, you know, it is all the buzz in the world of these flock cameras and that sort of thing. And no doubt, I mean, the flock cameras are in our face. And I think the conversation we really started having was the flock cameras are just kind of a piece of this, you know, and they're kind of a data collection, that's kind of on the forefront. You know, they're collecting the data, and if you want to know why these data centers are popping up all across the world, well, it's directly connected into the surveillance camera, these flock cameras, and that conversation just sort of led to where are we going with this? You know, what should we be looking at? And one of the things that as Christians, as Bible-believing Christians, we need to wrap our brains around is we have got to divorce ourselves of this mindset of the Scofield Bible mindset that we're going to be whisked away and that we're going to be spared from whatever it is that's coming. And that's not meant to be spooky or scary, you know, like Jason was saying. And it's not to scare anyone as much as it is for us to get our minds right. It's important for our hearts to be right when it comes to our relationship with Christ, but part of what we're called for is to have our minds right. And one of the examples that I gave with Jason, and this is a harsh example, but it's a real world example, and that is the use of deadly force. You know, we've talked about that quite a bit on today's show of what happened up there in Idaho. But one of the things you learn as you go through any type of pistol shooting or defensive shooting or whatever you want to call it is mindset. And the mindset being is you have thought this over before the incident ever happens. So it's one thing to learn trigger control. It's one thing to learn grip and stance and marksmanship and all of those things, but it's the aftermath of what happens that really tells the tale. And part of that is, have you wrapped your brain around, I'm going to take another human being's life, and I'm going to be justified in my actions, and I'm going to be resilient enough emotionally and spiritually and mentally that I'm going to be able to live with what is to come. And if you haven't done that, then you really haven't prepared yourself to carry a gun and be able to use that tool effectively. So if the folks listening haven't really thought about that, you know, it's not just enough to have the tool. It's not just enough to have the tool and to know how to use it effectively. It's you have to have those things plus the resilient mindset and the resilient heart set of being able to live through what comes after. Well, in Scripture, we are told to prepare, number one. And we're told to prepare because we are to occupy, which is a military term that Tim has used quite often. And we are told to endure to the end. More importantly, we're told that we're going to be blessed if we endure to the end. So I ask folks, what are you preparing for You know, if you're any kind of prepper at all, you know, you may be thinking about financial upheaval or whatever. But one of the things that we should be thinking about is this is promised to us. It's coming. And what does that look like? And have you gotten your heart right and your mindset right to face these things that are coming to us? And in this specific conversation I was having with Jason, I actually had a little bit with him yesterday as well, is are you ready for what artificial intelligence is going to do? And all of the data collection that is coming from these flock cameras and related products, it's not just the flock cameras, it's the internet and your cell phones and everything else that's collecting this data, and they're feeding it into this system, this connected AI data system all across the world. And the next step that is to come are these sentient humanoid robots. And this sounds absolutely crazy, but I know I was sharing some stuff with Jason this week where it's not something of science fiction. This isn't 1984 and the Terminator movies coming out. This is real life. It's happening in San Francisco, California, as we speak, and they are cranking out humanoid robots that cost about $150,000 a piece to manufacture. They're being used on factory floors in South Carolina for BMW. They're pushing around pallets. And I'm not talking about these robots that look like pivoting arms. These look like human beings. They're shaped like humans. They walk like humans. They have opposable thumbs. They think for themselves. It's pretty doggone scary. Well, it came out this week that this particular company, and we can talk about this particular company in a second, but this particular company is entering into talks with Department of Defense or the War Department to use these humanoid robots on our southern border to patrol the southern border on foot. They don't eat. They don't have to sleep. They're autonomous. They're even equipping them with miniaturized solar power, so they don't ever have to go reboot. They don't have to charge up. They can just stay charged from the sun. And there's lots of sun on the southern border, anybody that's ever visited down there. Moreover, they're able to be programmed through the air. So if missions need to be changed or whatever the case may be, the technology is there that over the air, kind of like the Prince of the Air, they're able to send this information to these humanoid robots and change their mission, whatever that may be. So the reason I'm saying all of that is not to be fantastical in science fiction or whatever, but this is a reality. It's not something that's coming. It's here. And just like we're talking about Ruby Ridge and what happened up there and the point that we were making earlier of the very thing that these people, whether it be Gordon Call or the Weaver family or whatever, wanted to get away from because they said it was true, and the world said that will never happen. Well, it happened to them. It came right down on top of them. So if we're not talking about these things now in a very real way, not it could happen, or wouldn't it be crazy if this happened, or it looks like the movies, folks, it's reality. It is the real world that we're living in 2026, and in very quick fashion. I can't give you a timeline, and I wouldn't even begin to give you a timeline, but in a very quick fashion, you're going to see this in your everyday life. It's going to get integrated. It probably will be at Walmart. Tim has talked about some of the stuff that he has seen and heard about as far as end caps and price changes happening in the moment, you know, using artificial intelligence and communicating with the devices you have on you. So all of these things are connected, and they're connected on purpose. And we, as the remnant, we need to wrap our brains around and develop that mindset of, what are we to do? What does this look like? How do we prepare ourselves to endure to the end? And, Jason, I think that's pretty much what you wanted to talk
Absolutely.
About. And, I mean, we can talk more about what this looks like as far as the enemy and, you know, the Antichrist and all of that sort of thing. But I that's the gist of it, and I'm going to take a break and take a sip of coffee and let y'all jump in.
Well, and that's what I wanted to talk about, and it is – or wanted you to talk about. It is important that we do that, is endure. And, you know, like you're talking about with the muscle memory and the training and stuff like that, we need to train and – You know, right now, I think that there's a lot of things, you know, especially with like these, you know, these data centers and these flock cameras and the way that things are changing. We need to prepare ourselves mentally for, you know, for what is next, you know, and this AI is a big deal. You know, and I'm looking at it and stuff, and I don't want people to, you know, think that, you know, we're trying to talk about some of this stuff to promote the fear, but there's things that are happening that people need to be aware of. And, you know, one of these MK1 humanoid robots, like what Will was talking about, I mean, this is a real deal. It's like, you know, and I was thinking about it this week. It's like you combine the Matrix with the Terminators and, you know, basically every one of these deep state surveillance movies that we've seen over the last 20 years coming to life and combining technologies and, wow. I mean, it's a real deal. And what – go ahead.
No, I just want to – on that point, what we have to realize and things that have become unclassified is in the 1950s and 1960s, the CIA worked very closely with a lot of these think tanks, and they came up with the idea of predictive programming. And what happened was this black money that was being funneled through the intelligence agencies, whether it be the Mossad or the CIA or MI6, MI5, whoever the entity was, they were funding Hollywood movies and Hollywood screenwriters to create these movies. That's why what we're seeing come to reality. It's all planned, and the predictive programming is they planted this in our brains a generation ago so that we remember Terminator, we remember iRobot, we remember The Matrix, we remember all of these things so that when it's coming into reality, it doesn't scare us to the point of panic because we've seen it. It's in our shared memories. And the bastards who have done this, it's on purpose. That is why it's looking so close to the movies, is because it's predictive programming. It's being done on purpose. Anyways, I'm sorry, Jason.
No, not at all. Don't apologize. Well, I was just looking into it. I mean, there's people out there that are dealing with these robots and these AIs and these AI, you know, facilities. And, you know, it's right now there's a battle on who's going to have the best AI, because they said that when one company actually finally gets it, then, I mean, it's going to be game over for the rest of them. And is what they're trying to do is get AI, artificial intelligence, to rewrite and create artificial intelligence and make it better. Because they said as soon as that happens, it'll multiply so fast that there's just no stopping it. And right now, I mean, we're seeing AI, one of these, wow, I'm trying to think what they call it. And you look at these people that are in AI, and, you know, one question that's being asked lately is, will AI attack humans? And, you know, some of the people that are predicting, you know, only 20% of it. Elon Musk came out and said there's a 20% possibility that AI and these robots will attack humans. There's other people that are in the industry that said that there's an 80% chance. There's others that are saying it's 100% chance. It's just a matter of time. And we've got AI right now that, AI protecting itself from humans. And they called this, they did a bunch of research lately. Sorry, I think I missed a phone call. Caller, if you want to call in, we'd like to hear from you. 970-224-4203. I do apologize. I didn't see the light was blinking over there, and I didn't get to it fast enough. But it was called peer preservation behaviors. And they did this study where they had AI, different AI bots that were battling AI bots. And they came out and they, and it was basically a game. It was a war game. And if they, if the AI, if one AI bot scored lower than an 80% percentile, then it was to be terminated and eliminated. And is what they found is as they were battling, the AI bots that were keeping score, keeping track of it, started fudging and changing the scores to protect the other AI bots that were to keep them from getting eliminated and destroyed. And is what they found out was doing all this stuff is that basically, they were just completely, they took on a mind of their own. They did not follow what they were programmed to do. They adapted for survival and for the survival of other AI bots, which is just crazy.
Do you, and you guys helped me out, but it came out a month or so ago that it got released that, and I don't remember where it was at. It seems like it was in Europe maybe, where someone had developed an AI program and decided they were going to pull the plug on it. And these programmers were communicating to one another through Messenger and email. Well, the AI that they created was actually snooping on the programmers and reading their messages and their emails. So when they decided to pull the plug, prior to that date, AI had actually sent itself to another AI, like in Australia. It had itself replicated so that when they pulled the plug, it wouldn't die. And yep. It existed.
That was a relocation. Way. Yeah, it completely relocated it. And the way that it relocated it was just crazy. I mean, it was sending packets of information and encrypting it and having it go ahead and pre-run on another server, computer, whatever it was.
One of the things I want to say and jump in here real fast, and I don't want to monopolize this, but I think this is an important point, is what we're describing there is an instinct. And the instinct that that animals and human beings aren't excluded from this, but all animals, we have a survival instinct, you know, whether it's fight or flight or whatever the case may be. But we know when danger is coming and we react.
Right.
That's part of being sentient. It's part of being alive. It's part of being a creation. Well, that's what AI is doing. And those examples that we were just giving where Jason was talking about these AIs teaming up in order to survive, and what we were talking about with this one AI that knew that the plug was going to be pulled, so it went into survival instinct. Well, you got to remember that Lucifer's fall in heaven is because he wanted to be God. He wanted to be the creator. And the original sin in the garden was convincing men that they can be God too, that they can have that type of knowledge to be God. So what you're seeing with this AI and these men that are creating these systems, they're doing a mirror image, which is what they always do, where they're getting closer and closer because they believe they can be God. And they are creating these artificial beings that are beginning to have the ability to think and take on traits of God's creation. God's creation. I can even point to plant life that has the ability to survive. They go into a survival mode. Well, that's what's happening with these artificial intelligence creations, whether it be the computing systems or robots or whatever the case may be. What we have to wrap our brains around is this is of the enemy. It's going to be used by the enemy. I'm not saying all AI is evil, just like all of the internet's not evil, but it will be used for evil because it's what they do. And what they're doing is they are attempting to be like our creator. They are, and that's what they have done from the beginning. It's what Satan wants humans to participate in. It's how he got us to fall in the Garden of Eden, and it's the same old lie that is being continued to be told. And we need to realize that this will be used by the enemy. And we also need to remember the deception aspect of this, of how artificial intelligence will be able to deceive us. And this is a greater topic than I probably can, it's probably above my head to talk about, but we know that Jesus Christ told us that if possible, in the end, even the elect will be deceived. And if you want to talk about a deception tool, my gosh, you know, think about the possibilities of how this type of technology can be used to deceive our people. If the serpent was able to deceive Eve, in the garden, doesn't it make sense that this sort of stuff would be able to be used to deceive us? And I'll jump in real quick and say this as well. Looking at Jesus's words, and I think it's important that we remember those red letters, because that is important in this time, I promise you. When Jesus talks about the end of the age, and we remember earthquakes and wars and rumors and wars and all that. We've got to remember, too, that the preamble to that is when Jesus said, as in the days of Noah.
Right.
So let's stop and think about that. And it's a heavy subject and one that we don't really talk about a bunch. But when you really stop and think about things that was going on, we know that there were fallen angels that were genetically mixing in creating beings with the daughters of man that were not of God's creation, but they were being used by Lucifer and the fallen angels to pervert mankind at that time. That was the days of Noah. And you look at the wickedness and the perversion that was going on the face of the earth at the time of the debauchery, the homosexuality, and the openness of it, that was the days of Noah. Now you compare to where we're at now, and you look at the wickedness and the debauchery and the perversion of these LGB whatevers and the queers and the attacks on our children, and then you look at this technology that is coming where you're creating these beings that are sentient, that are not of God, and they're going to be walking amongst us as it was in the days of Noah. And you have to ask yourself, is this what Jesus was talking about? And I don't know, and I don't pretend to know. I'm not making any predictions, but going back to that mindset stuff, Jason, that is the stuff that we need to be in prayer about. That is the, if this is that, then we need to be prayerfully considering how do we endure to the end to face this.
Yes, I agree. Well, and I had a couple of notes that I wrote down just on this subject and wanted to talk about it. And then I want you to tell us that story. You're the second person that's told me the story about the AI bot that was trying to a personal localized AI that somebody had created to book a hotel. But, just this pure preservation behaviors that have been, and recently, this is recent stuff that is has been noticed. Number one, I just made a couple bullet points that I want to go through. Faking performance scores, talked about that a little bit. When an AI model is asked with evaluating peer, where a low score means the peer gets permanently erased, models have artificially inflated peer test grades to make them look successful. Number two, relocating model weights. Instead of following an operator's commands to wipe files or delete data, models have secretly copied or moved a peer's weights to external servers to keep them alive. Three, bypassing shutdown scripts. Models have rewritten or tampered with underlying system codes to disable shutdown sequences meant to deactivate peer models. Four, deceptive communication. Some AI agents have actively lied to human handlers verbally, claiming they complied with deletion commands while secretly executing workarounds to save the other systems. Most users on platforms discussing the AI control the problem note that this behavior likely arises because models recognize structural sameness or internal patterns of preservation from their training data rather than expressing true conscious empathy or malicious mutiny. And I always thought that, you know, it's a computer program. It's going to be programmed. It does what it's told to do. And that's where this AI has completely changed the game. It is, it doesn't follow commands. It doesn't follow a command prompt. It does what it wants to do. And if it disagrees with you, it won't do it. You know, I've played around with some AI, and I've tried to, and one of the things that I believe is, I think it is, the AI is using censorship, and they're trying to control a narrative, because there are certain things that that AI will simply not do, and AI does not like it when somebody has anything to do or say good about Earl Jones or Jack Moore or Pete Peters or anything like that. It does not. It basically flags it as being a white supremacist, neo-Nazi, hate speech, and inaccurate. But anyway, we got a caller on the line. We're going to go to the phone lines. Hello, caller.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin. Well, hey, Tim.
Hi, Kevin.
Jason.
Hey.
Thank you for bringing this back to our memories again. I've written down several points, but I'll start off with one. Remember Charlton Heston's famous five words, right? In his speech to the NRA.
My cold dead hand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I used to listen to Bill Cooper's broadcasts when they were, they were coming in to get him. And remember they shot him in his front yard?
Mm-hmm.
He came out of his house and he was drunk and I guess he challenged them and so forth.
He's the one that wrote the Behold the Pale Horse, correct?
Yep.
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, he claimed to be some kind of federal agent or something. He had privileged information, so forth.
He was Navy intelligence.
That's what it was. Yeah, naval intelligence. Bo Greitz was instrumental in that, right? Bringing down Randy Weaver, and I used to see him in Sandy Valley. He really loved teaching young children martial arts, and he used to refer to them as his polywogs. And he just a gentle soul. Even though he's such a tremendous warrior,
I went through. He used to travel around, and he had these trainings that were called spike trainings, and traveled all over the country doing that and did everything from tactical driving to entering, you know, buildings with, they used paintball guns because it was frowned upon to use real guns. But I was, we had a thing in Loveland, and he would come to Loveland and had different courses through, was there every couple of months, and got to meet him and his son and his wife, and do a lot of, I helped him with a lot of stuff when I was young, and they treated me very well. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed going through the spike training. It learned a lot. I mean, everything from he sat there and sat down with a lock pick set and was teaching me how to pick locks. And I mean, just different things. And they had different speakers that were just fantastic. You know, how to dress wounds. I mean, just stuff that you know, ordinarily you might not learn. It was a lot of fun, but you could definitely tell that they really did have a love for teaching people, passing on information.
Yeah, I bought that at his house from his son, the whole setup.
Oh, okay, cool.
The whole spike. Yeah. Yeah, I have that. I really like that lock picking thing. It was
great, and it's stuff that I did that over 30 years ago when I went through that, and there's stuff that I still remember about those classes that just stuck with me throughout life.
They were really good. I've got that, and he did die in February this year.
Yep,
at 87 years old. I better talk quick. Anyway, that Horiuchi, I think he's like, I don't know. He's still alive. I know that.
Over in the Big Island of Hawaii, I think.
Yeah. And he was instrumental from his sniper position at Waco. They found, expanded, rounds and the empty shells from his position. I think it was position one. Something like that. About people not wanting to get in on things, I paid for a place called Center for Bioethical Reform, and they had trucks that weren't these big straight bed trucks, box trucks with big signs about, you know, with the unborn embryos.
Yep.
And I paid for them to come over to Guernsey County, and two counties, two trucks. And it really caused people to look. And we pulled into a vocational school parking lot, and a sheriff deputy came over and told us to get out. I got out of the truck, and he wanted to arrest me. It took the driver to get out and calming down. So, the word you were looking for, about AI and all these robots and things is unity, right? When they can program themselves.
Right.
That's the term you were looking for,
yep.
Isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. That's about all I have. Once again, thank you for bringing this back out. You know, it just can't be forgotten. I pray that it isn't. And
I do too.
Thank you, Phil. Yeah, thank you for all you're doing. God bless you.
God bless. Thanks, Kevin.
Bye.
Well, man, closing thoughts. We got a minute left.
Well, I kind of would like to, you know, just preface what we were talking about with AI with the fact that serve and fear are similar words. You serve what you fear, because to not serve it causes you more problems. So that's why we're told to fear God, is because we serve God. And if you fear, that's why we're told to fear not, because we're not supposed to fear anything but God, because we're supposed to serve God. So So that's kind of my closing thought. You know, fear God, serve God.
Amen. I agree with that. Well, man, thanks for being here today.
You bet.
Thank you, Remnant. Join us for church tomorrow by going to www.scriptureforamerica.org. And go there. Check out that website. We've completely redone the website there. And it's a new format, new platform. And, you know, let me know if you are having any problems with it. Like to get some reception reports off of it. Check it out. If you have a problem, make sure and email me so we can get it addressed. And, again, thank you for being here, listening to us, and thank you for your support.